We kind of have a philosophy of like, we have pioneers in our engineering side that like to be on the bleeding edge of things, but for clients, it's not wise to always be on the bleeding edge, because if you deliver something bleeding edge, the next year it dies and they're like, what did you do? Like, well, sorry, it was fun for us.
Welcome to the Leaders of B2B podcast, a weekly show where we bring you interviews and in the weeds expertise with today's B2B experts and thought leaders. You can see more about today's episode and guest by visiting our website at leadersofb2b.com.
Hey, leaders, welcome back. This is Ledge. Guest today, Stephen Callender. Stephen, welcome. Looking forward to talking to you. Love if you would give an introduction of yourself and your work for the audience's benefit.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, Ledge. Yeah, it's Stephen Callender. I am the owner of Foster Commerce. And we are primarily a custom dev shop for web apps, websites, things like that. And basically just an agency, one of the million of dev shops in the world. And we're building out the best code ever. So that's what we do.
Nice. You've been in the game for quite a while. So there's a lot of agencies, but I know because you and I've had conversations about approaches and differentiation there from the way you execute work. And there's a lot of gab online, always has been, about different ways to approach software. And you seem to have developed one that actually works. So I was interested in that for the product developer and tech side of our audience. Let's start there with engineering, because I think that's much talked about, not much understood.
So I mean, the engineering side is basically, so for us, we're ultimately creating deliverables, right? Writing code to meet certain business needs, right? And so as a service agency for us, since we're not a product team, right? I think for us, there's a difference of being a product team versus being an engineering team as an agency where we have a bunch of clients with their products that we're working on. And so that is a kind of a distinction on that side. We're ultimately all doing the same thing. We're all pushing code, writing code, hoping it works, right? Finding ways of QAing it. And meeting once we deliver it to see if it actually met the need that whatever was requested, whether it's stakeholders, higher ups, C-suite people, or marketing team, or just somebody from the client side that had a request.
Right. And the management of an engineering team is like one of your favorite things. You talk about that, like last time that we've talked, is what is that? How is it different than managing anybody? It's outcome based, it's deliverable based. Now, I'm saying this a little tongue in cheek because I have managed product and engineering teams. And I know, in fact, it's not the same. But for folks out there that are leaders and managers, it might be helpful to think about what's different with this type of team and this type of deliverable.
Yeah. So the deliverables for us are really concrete, right? So you can write code, you can push it, and you can ship it. And there's very tangible, even though it's code, it's a very tangible kind of production of something that gets done. And so there are clear goals in that. So the way for us, like that kind of works out, is we have very clear specs then, right? So like the way we kind of work and the way I think that a lot of people can work in managing engineers applies for a lot of places. It's like, what's your goal? What are you working on? And you can start big. Like you can say, hey, we're building a website. And you're like, oh, that's a possibly 1 year long project or a 6 month long project. People in any work can have those types of things. You can have a goal. It's like, hey, our goal is to build out this building. I don't know, right? It's going to take amount of time in order to actually get to your end date and the thing that you want. The thing that we do really well is start breaking that work down into smaller chunks. And because those things are measurable, we can start breaking them out even smaller and smaller and smaller. My team only works on tasks that are no more than 8 hours at a time. So for us, as we have these huge projects that we're doing, they all get broken down into smaller and smaller units, ultimately to where there are tasks that are less than 8 hours that will be accomplished. And so there's a lot of like splitting things up, breaking things down. And in that becomes the risk mitigation of like thinking deeply about, okay, how are we going to do this? What's the implementation method? And so a lot of it is the prep work. We have tons of prep work and there's a lot of writing, kind of like spec notes and stuff, so that we don't have a developer that can go a week without checking in, without saying, hey, this is what I'm working on. It's impossible on our team. And so I think that's where the benefit is, like for us, and like at least how I would say to manage anyone. What's happened is funny is I've done this with like engineers. Like with engineers, we just learned to like break things down so that we communicate often. And now I have other team members who aren't engineers, marketing team members, account managers. And I've learned that we apply the same process for them. It's just, let's set the same rules for all this stuff. And even recently, I've been implementing the same idea for our marketing director and even at director level. And it's like the benefit of it, of getting more work done, is pretty powerful.
What's that discipline? What comes to my head is, I probably do this, right? I mean, I get things done. I probably take big things and break them into little things. But I'm trying to think, like, when you look at it that procedurally, how do you know where to cut big things into little things? Where are the dotted lines with the little scissor picture? And then how do you know what is an 8-hour versus not, other than just how kind of like having that experience? And it might just be like, well, you need experience, so that's why you should hire us, because we've been around a long time.
Yeah. Well, obviously, experience will help you get better at estimating those things whenever you break it down. But ultimately, you don't have to plan too far ahead. So I think that's the main thing too, is it's kind of agile in that sense. Like, we're not capital A agile in how we work, but we were in the sense of figure out where you are today, plan on your next move. And then as you make progress, as you get further down, then you can have a better vision. As you come over the hill, you can start to see more and more, and you can only plan for what you can see. So like further down the road is really vague still. It's bigger and bigger and kind of wider. And only as you get closer do you start to break things down, you know, at that point. Unless you've done the thing a million times, you can say, oh, it's already broken down for 3 months down the road. When we get there, we already have it broken down because we've done this before. But if it's new, if it's something you're not familiar with, and that happens for us all the time, is we just say, what's your first step? So when I give an assignment to somebody that's a bit larger, let's say, hey, we've got this new maps feature that's going to be interactive and show all these things, and I give it to a developer. The first thing we give them is the specs. Here's the design for it. Here's the outcome. Here's the interactions, all that good stuff, right? Their first job is to go in and then write their implementation method, like their plan. Break it down. Like, when you look at this, what is going to be your approach? How are you going to tackle this? Share that with us. Share that with the team. And it forces them to kind of think through it. And then, so there's some level of like, okay, I'm going to do first one step, second step, third step. But there might be a point where they say, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do past that, because I want to see what feedback I get in my code, like in my own process, interacting with the code and what I'm trying to do. Then I'll be able to determine at that point. And that's fine. Just as long as whenever you get to that point, you have a plan and you can just say, all right, I'll stop in and check in at 4 hours, 8 hours, and kind of know from there. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but that's how our approach is. To, you have to know something for the immediate. If you don't, then you probably need more clarity before you start diving into it.
Like, plan to the level of high fidelity visibility that you have. What I think is different there than what I've experienced there, it's just the discipline of, you will be writing this down and you will be spending X number of hours on planning. I've been in enough environments where no planning happens and everybody's just firing away. So I think you're just institutionalizing, like, it's not ready, fire, aim. Yeah. Like, wait, we hired you because you're smart. Use your brain and be able to communicate how you are going to address this problem, and then have a feedback loop with the other smart people in the room.
Yeah. Someone really smart, I think, once shared on LinkedIn that slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. Yeah, yeah. I am a big fan of that. I may have one time written that, but I did not by any means invent it. But yes, I flagged that on somebody else's post just the other day. I actually, of course, because I'm a big dork, you know, I had to go figure out, where did this come from? And apparently it dates to, they're not exactly sure who the first person was to say it, but it's popular with the Navy SEALs. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. That's exactly our approach, right? Is slow down, make sure that your road ahead is smooth, that you kind of know what you're getting into a bit, like plan that out. And then as soon as you have the plan, it's going to be easier to move forward. Because if you're just fumbling, I mean, I've had these experiences. I've learned these from hardships. My first major issue was, hired a developer, gave him a project and said, hey, here's what you're doing. And then I check in, you know, I'm like, hey, how's it going? Still going to meet our deadline? Yeah, it sounds good. 2 months later, I'm like, hey, it's time to show up and do this thing. And shows up, shows me what he has. And I'm just like, this is all wrong. Absolutely all of this is all wrong. And we cannot use this. So I had to let him go. And then we had to rewrite it and do it all. And I was like, I cannot afford to ever do that again.
So you actually only did that once? I mean, most people just do that a lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've done it now where it's like, oh, we lost a week. Cause then I learned, I think, oh, let me check in once a week or make a force a thing, you know, and do a check in on a week. And then now it's daily. We have daily, what I call self-reports. So our team does a lot of mini self-reports because the thing I don't want to do is constantly check in with them. Hey, how's this going? Hey, how's this going? Cause it interrupts them. You never know when it's going to happen. It feels like Big Brother kind of watching. And it just feels unnecessary. Like I want the information available at the moment I need it without interrupting them. And so what we have are just regular daily and weekly level self reports. So a developer says, I'm working on this thing. Here's how it's going. And they have their own pattern for that, that we've set up. We've institutionalized and we have these process for that. So I rarely ever have to go in and say, hey, how's this going? Because I know how it's going. I can just look at their notes that they have to fill in.
Yeah, it speaks to respect and like for your leadership, because there are a lot of organizations that have quote unquote standards, you know, you will follow this, except then nobody does. And then there's no consequence for not doing it that way. And so it becomes the standard that is really just the analog for the dusty SOP that's on the shelf in the old binder. And like, how'd you get there? You're really talking about building a culture of self-reporting discipline and ownership.
Yeah. It was hard to get there. I'm kind of a people pleaser. I don't like to force people to do things. I want people to kind of want to be around. And so I was very hesitant to like be the boss. And so I think for me, how we got there was just one, I realized like when things go wrong, it impacts me and my family. And this is my business, this is my income, this is my future. I'm like, no one's going to mess with my family. So if you want to work here, like these are expectations. And so there's a part of it is just like it there that I started just being okay to be the boss and just saying this is a requirement and not backing down from that. I think that's part of it is just my own emotional attachment to that of being okay with saying this is the demand. I think the other piece of that is just sharing the reasons why. So like, I'm not doing this because I want to hover. I want to do it so I don't have to hover. I'm not doing it because I don't trust you. I don't really trust anyone, but like you're not special in that. Like, it's not like I don't trust you because you're you. I just don't trust humans to like always be disciplined.
Amen to that, man.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are or what your neurotype is that you come with. We've kind of built a system that even if you're just a self-disciplined go-getter and you're going to get things done, you'll love it because then you now know that your work is being seen and you have clear directions, which I think that's what people want. They want clear directions. They want to know when they're doing a good job. And so these little like process moments give them a clear sign like, hey, I've checked in, I've done these things. And the feedback I got was, hey, this is great. And that happens every single day, or at least every week if somebody's like really isolated. So how do we do it? Part of it is also just the tooling that we have, right? Of just, we use Basecamp and the tooling that they have that allows us to have automatic questions. So automatic check-ins where we kind of set things up for automatic check-ins. We don't have to use some bot in Slack or something. You could, whoever uses those could do that as well, right? These things that right. You automatically check in. But then we just hold people accountable. Hey, you didn't do it. You know, we have one-on-ones with our team and we'll check in of like, hey, your communication's not been up to snuff. Like, what's happening? And kind of check in. I don't know. We share all that stuff. Like, share the reasons why. You know, I don't want to hover. That's the main run. I want to hover. So give me your report so I don't have to.
Well, and then having the like, I will hold you accountable. You know, I don't want to. I'm capable of and willing to.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, because we'll put people on performance improvement plans if it becomes really too bad. I think I've learned that too. There's one guy I had to let go. I really liked him, but he just could never deliver. And I was like, we made these changes and he just couldn't adjust to them. And he was always just not responding and only a day or two late, but it was every single week. A day or two late. And I was just like, this is too stressful. Like, if you can't adjust a day or two, like it just becomes not worth it. Great coder, but I just couldn't have him on anymore. I think our team has just learned. Yeah, it's now new people, they come in. So we just hired a new designer. New designer is learning all of our systems. Like, I have never seen so much process, you know, in a thing. And he gets it, instantly gets it. He's able to do more deep work because there's fewer interruptions.
Which is totally not what the fear would be, right? Oh, there's so much process. You often hear that and you think like, oh, there's so much bureaucracy and stupid BS, you know, that I never get to do any real work, but that's the opposite. So then I'm sure there are people listening who are kind of like, wait, like, how do you do process in a way that's actually efficient? And I guess that itself is a design discipline. Like, we don't want to add essentially any unbillable things that we don't have to the world. We can use tooling. We can use process. Process ought to be rigorous, but once you learn it, it ought to be fast.
Yeah, super fast. And we want to make it to where it's clear what's being requested. It's come as a muscle memory too, right? And the thing that we're constantly iterating on is what questions are we asking, so that we're not asking questions that are pointless. We want meaningful questions so we have meaningful answers. And but if it all of a sudden becomes not meaningful, then we remove it. And so it's like, you got to iterate on that stuff and figure out like, what are ultimately the right questions at the right time to ask of people?
Is that part of your leadership role, is iterating, processing questions? Like, is that where you spend the majority of your time? Because I mean, it's so important. And I've been in roles where I kind of go like, I remember I took over a COO role once, and I was just like, every week on Tuesday at noon, there was this detailed spreadsheet report that got emailed by this one guy, and it went to all these people. And I'd go like, hey, what is this? And the guy would go, oh, well, it's blah, 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 blah. And it would, you know, like all these words. And I was like, okay. And so then I went to every single person on that email distribution and said, what do you do with this when it arrives? I don't even know what it is. I just delete it. To a man. And somebody at some point had made a process that person X should do this thing. It was 8 hours a week report that was going into 40 people, all of whom deleted it. And no one had taken the time to just one time take the work and ask that question, what the hell is this? And is it valuable?
Yeah, that wouldn't happen with us. A lot of my time is spent, I mean, not so much anymore because we've established it. We kind of have a pretty good flow right now, at least with our dev team. I think I'm learning how to apply it with our design team because we're moving more into design. So there's some differences in design that the work is not so linear. With coding, you can kind of go from task one to task two to task three. You can kind of go from top to bottom. In design, like, a designer may get exhausted working on a certain thing that's going to be a bigger project. So then I'm still learning all this of like, okay, well, what are the right check-in moments? What are the things I need to know? What are the things that we need to set up so they can do uninterrupted deep work as often as possible?
I'd imagine the same thing for marketing. Marketing would be like any strategy and creative work. You just get abused if you keep looking at it and you don't give your space between, you know, if you don't sleep on it, like, you're not going to wake up and go, you know, I just figured something out because my brain digested that, which could certainly happen in solving, you know, some kind of algorithmic challenge, but that's your planning stage. Like, you can make it in that more sort of pre-planned type of approach where, you know, if inspiration needs to strike for design, or, you know, I need to go look at mood boards and like reprogram my brain or take a walk, it's a weird thing for more strategic sort of fluffy work, which is probably why engineers go, designers aren't real work, you know.
It's very different because I'm a developer by freelance trade. Like, my training is in marriage and family counseling and not in code. I'm really relying on designers to like tell me like, what is your experience? Because I want to make sure, for me to get the best work out of you, I need to not interrupt you. And so that's a discipline on me. I think it's really important for managers to make sure to check themselves. So like, you cannot keep interrupting your team and then expect good work. It's not okay, at least for that type of work in my mind. So managers interrupt us all day long. I mean, that's what we want. It's like, check in with us, tell us, I don't care.
That's how we justify our value.
Exactly. Yeah, let me sign off on stuff all day long.
We don't work, we manage. It's totally different.
Yeah, I'm just doing it's just approvals all day long. Yep, that's good. Nope, that's not good. But no, we're setting up a lot of operations stuff. So that's what I want, is I want it to be a system that people are clear on what they're working on. There's a discipline in the systems that then says you are allowed to focus on these few things at a time so that you're not distracted by shiny things or by a false urgency of new things that come in. So we set plans and we put them in writing. Here is your plan for the week. We only do weekly plans too. We don't do anything beyond weekly plans. So every week we create a new plan for every single person. So they know this is my priority. If something urgent comes up midweek, then we can kind of know like, all right, who's the best person to interrupt for this thing? And that's what we're starting to do with our marketing director. She's kind of asked for that, like, because she's doing a lot. She does a lot. She's all over the place in a lot of things. And I want to give her a peace of mind that just is like, you can focus on fewer things. And so you can have a deeper dive into them. And then I'm giving you permission to then ignore everything else. And like, we'll just chip away at this stuff, like, you know, over time and just be a little bit more patient with it.
There's a, you know, unlimited literature in psychology and neuroscience around like, we are not built and cannot multitask. And deep work is the only work. We just all fool ourselves into the massive, massive cost of switching, and it's exhausting. And you also do a crappy job at, you know, most of the things. Now, some jobs are just built that way. Like my world is I spend a lot of time on sales calls. And guess what? Each time you do it, it's another interruption and it's expensive. And by the end of the day, my eyes are falling out. But I think that productive output-based work that isn't, you know, essentially like performance-based is, it's necessary. And we all do such a bad job of Slack reminders and 50,000 windows open. I want a thing where it's like, it sends me an electric shock every time I open a Chrome tab or something. I miss the discipline. I love coding. I think it was like some of my favorite years. I miss the idea that you can end up with something. Like I have a tangible result. It compiles and, you know, it doesn't there. For all I know, things have moved beyond that.
We're still compiling.
Yeah. Okay, good, good. Yeah, I feel better now. Just actually having some output that you can hang your hat on. That's why I like working outside. I moved that pile of rocks from this side of the yard to that side. I mean, I can see it and it is a pile of rocks. I didn't need to make a garden out of it. I moved rocks and they are physically in a different place, and that's very satisfying to me. So.
Absolutely. I love it. I agree. And that's what our team wants, right? So like anybody else who has team that are doing, that's what they want. They want to be productive and they want to be able to just focus on doing the thing that they enjoy and doing as much of it as possible. And I think the benefit for companies, even if you have product teams, is to let them do that. So I think on product teams, it's easier, but I know a lot of people on product teams still go to meetings and they have a bunch of stuff and they're interrupted. I would just encourage people to like, stop all that. It's not helpful. Like for us, I don't even know if anybody's ever online. Like we don't use Slack purposefully. It's just an interruption machine. And it's a thing of like, you feel like you're entitled to a response to somebody because they're online. If like the thing says you're available, then you can interrupt them and you're entitled to get their attention. And that's just not how we work. I tell people on our team too, the expectation is you're going to get an answer tomorrow. Like just know that when you put in a request, you're going to check in with somebody. Just have in your mind that you're not going to get a response till tomorrow. You might get a response in 5 seconds, but don't plan on it. You cannot just go and interrupt somebody. It is not allowed. You don't have that privilege and that power.
You describe that as calmness, like the calm agency, which anybody in agency life is sort of like, agency life is insane, man. Like you built this intentionally to result in, you seem like a calm guy. So, you know, maybe it was like for your own zen and then you propagated it. But I mean, it probably feels like normal operating procedure, but like, I don't think I've ever seen anybody describe an agency as calm. It's freaking insanity all the time. And, you know, you can only survive X number of years in agency life before you. So what is that? Is that the effect of intentional process discipline?
I think so. I mean, it definitely comes from me that I want calm. I don't want to be interrupted. I don't want panic. I don't want to live my life that way. And nobody else does either. But also, I think from that same thing I said earlier, like I don't like to impose on people. And so I don't want to interrupt. I realized early on when things were chaotic, then I would just do it because I didn't want to interrupt them. And so let me set up systems where I don't have to be the one who does it, but also we don't have to panic about it. So obviously, some of it comes with, if you just do good work and coding, like then you won't have as many bugs appear. So you won't have the urgency that it comes up. So part of it is just do good quality from the beginning. How do you get good quality? Don't interrupt people, let them do their stuff. But I think the calmness really for the way we achieve it is setting reasonable expectations without, I guess the other piece is we don't do a lot of deadlines. So even with client work, we don't really work on deadlines and we don't often let clients put us on deadlines.
So it's outcome based.
It's outcome based. It's basically like our clients buy time from us because everything's custom dev. So it's like, you know, nothing's ever been done before. Obviously, ideas of it have been done before, but this particular instance of this thing is, and so we can estimate and stuff, but there's always going to be unknowns. And so we can say, hey, we'll try to get it done this week. It's on our list. It's your top priority. And ultimately clients can fire us if they don't think we're moving fast enough per the dollars they spend. Ultimately, we just say, give us your top down priority list and we will move as efficiently as possible through those and get those done based on your budget. So if your budget is only 5 hours a month, then obviously we're not going to get very far because every time we spin back up, you know, we're doing a little bit of that. But I don't know, maybe I went off from calmness a bit.
Well, it's creating the structure of calmness and clients maybe not used to hearing that. So, but probably also envy it. And if the results turn out, I mean, you would then put yourself in a position of the look back of having great client experiences over the course of years and lots of client feedback being like, essentially, this was unconventional and it worked, which is what you need. The whole business would be based on, yeah, take a chance on this thing that sounds not like what you expected. And then from the agency side, I would guess you've determined that a lot of times it's always easier to work for clients that have done software things before, so that you never want to be the first one. Because then it's like, why can't you get this done in 3 hours? It's just code, man.
It's just code, right? You can do AI now, does it, right? Aren't you just prompting this thing? I think that's the big piece is client buy-in and client understanding. But I think it goes into our structure of billing and invoicing and like how that works. The fact that we do small tasks too. So even if a client says, hey, build this interactive map for me, they know, okay, when we do that, they will ultimately end up seeing probably 10 different tasks in order for that to be created. So it's like, we'll do the front end UI piece of this. We'll just break it down into the bits of pieces that can happen. And they can instantly see in the same idea of like self-reporting, they can always just check in and be like, oh, which parts of this have they built? And even they don't have to come in and ask.
That same discipline applies to like reporting to the client. You can't go dark because like people can't see that stepwise tiny sets of improvements every day unless you tell them.
And all of our stuff is 100% visible to our clients. So they can observe those details down to the every 4 hour task if they want and see all this stuff, or they can just wait for the next check-in meeting minutes. It depends on, and most of them just wait for the next check-in meeting because they trust us to keep moving.
Yeah. Well, it's trust comes from that experience then. So that's critically important. I think you should write the book on this, the calm agency. Yeah. So plan a book.
I have absolutely nothing else to do. Things are so calm. I just meditate all day long.
Things are so calm. You just hang out, got your feet up.
Exactly what's happening.
Has that discipline extend to, so you're like, I always think of like personal mental health and like, are you like a yoga guy or like meditation or anything like that? That's what it goes to for, what do you do for yourself? Are you applying these same principles to the rest of life?
I wish. I think the honest answer is I'm not normally, I know you say I seem calm and stuff like, but no, I get worked up. I get anxious to do the right thing and get hyper-focused on some stuff. But like, I think where I built that for my team is I wanted to protect them from me and my worst impulses. So I think that's a lot of management too, is like managers just have to protect their team from themselves and their worst impulses. And so I didn't want my worst days to impact my team. And so I think that's also another reason why I built things that way. So I don't think I'm personally always just chill. I mean, I do think like I can chill, but no, I'm not like meditating.
Not like a Zen master.
Not at all. I like to go slow. My wife will tell me that when I'm cleaning things or something, like, why does it take so long to clean this? But generally, no, I like to go slow.
Because slow is smooth and smooth is fast, honey. So yeah.
There we go.
That probably goes great.
Exactly. She's much more talented and smarter than I am. I get a lot of lessons from her, actually. So she's a principal at a school and kicks butt. So it's phenomenal. Her team's bigger and I learn lessons from how to run a team from what she does.
You want to see chaos? Yeah. Like agency got nothing on academia. So.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. I bet she runs a tight ship.
She does. Yeah, she really does. Yeah.
You're in detention.
But she's got K-1, so I don't think that happens too often. But if it was older, that would probably be a thing for sure. With the kids on PIPs.
That's a book. Right. Performance improvement for children.
I think a lot of people want to figure out how to do remote work too, because it's always happening, right? if you can figure out, because the thing you can't do in remote work, to carry on the theme of calmness and like systems, is in remote work, you can't always meet. You have to figure out a way of how to do things async. And you can't always check in with the person at the moment you want to check in, because by the time you're going to check in, it's going to be a time zone later the next day and all that stuff. If you want a global team, or if you have a global team and you need to figure out ways for like people to still work without being blocked, having bottlenecks in their work, waiting for that stuff, then you've got to give ways of like that self-reporting process, the ways of working smaller so that when there are blockages, it's a small block versus a big block. So that's the thing that like a mantra for us is like work small, deploy often in that bit. And so I think that's kind of agile, but we do it for everything.
Agile is what? Attempt to distill best practices into some model that at least a few people agree on.
Exactly.
My standard is always better than your standard.
Exactly. But I think the benefit is for people that do remote work, whether you're in different time zones or not, like the fact that I think there's a tendency in remote work to want to micromanage a bit more.
Yeah, right.
Because you don't have that trust of the team. I'll be honest, I think, and I get this from the book, It's Okay to Be the Boss. So there's a book called It's Okay to Be the Boss that really changed my view. And I kind of reference it. And I just say that that's something, a lesson I learned was it's okay to be the boss. But in that book, he talks about micromanaging as less of an issue than undermanagement. And he kind of explains why. And I believe it. That's something that's it's impacted me, is like not undermanaging. Because if you give people too much of a leash, then you have that 2 month story that I have of like a developer who worked for 2 months and then wasted 2 months and 2 months of money. And then actually the next 2 months to get it right. And so undermanagement causes a lot more problems, but there's a way to do management that still doesn't cross into micromanagement. So it's like finding that balance of like that in between of like, what is just good, healthy management? So you're not getting screwed as a manager of undermanaging and then getting the wrong deliverables and people who are just not really being disciplined, and you're paying for their 8 hours of their day. You want the best of their 8 hours and then let them go live their life and not work more than that. But you also don't want to show me everything that you're doing and explain that micromanaging. So I think that's where I'm trying to pursue, is that middle, just what is just healthy management?
Right, right. That balance of constant feedback. And I imagine those processes iterate based on, you talked about Basecamp or reporting tools or whatever it is, like there are new things that come out. And ultimately, all of us are going to be able to exploit AI for actually useful things. I mean, no, it's not going to replace, but in fact, we will be able to execute stuff faster. So you have to pay attention to that changing paradigm. I can produce better outputs if I use those tools correctly and faster, but I can do it without sacrificing. And then I can allow deeper work, for example. There are really good ways to think about that. Do you carve out time as the leader to just explore the state of the art, because you have to upgrade processes as you go, or you end up with like a strict process to have the, I don't know, the elevator operator where you don't need it anymore. There's a button, you just push it.
Yeah. And that's a good question. No, I don't know that I do. I honestly don't even know how other agencies run. I don't know if there's learnings from other agencies. Honestly, I felt like when I used to listen to a lot of gurus to get advice on like how to do things, and those were the worst moments of my life, mostly because you start to doubt yourself. And so it's like you listen to them and you're like, oh, I should do it this way. I turned them all off and I was like, forget this. I'm just going to do the way I work. And it got better. I have a tendency to actually start ignoring people. So I don't really listen to a lot of what's out there. But now I have my marketing director. She listens to what's happening out there. And our head of engineering stays more attuned to new things are coming. But also we kind of have a philosophy of like, we have pioneers in our engineering side that like to be on the bleeding edge of things. But for clients, it's not wise to always be on the bleeding edge, because if you deliver something bleeding edge, the next year it dies and they're like, what did you do? Like, well, sorry, it was fun for us.
I'm sorry, that framework no longer exists and has been deprecated. And that's your fault for choosing a thing. Or at the very least, it's going to be perceived as your fault. It's just a question of, and also not like, oh, you know, we wrote your thing in something that's so old that it's no longer supportable. So it's all about that balance. Some people would scoff at Basecamp. Well, so basically, if it works because you implemented your thing on top of it, that's not, has nothing to do with the tool, except that yeah, there's 50,000 other things you could do for running a dev team, but you could probably lift and shift your philosophies into any tool set. And you just chose one that helps you implement it, but it exists separate from the tool or method, just driving from, which is how people often do technology wrong. We could talk about build and buy, right? Like, I can buy a thing, but if I don't know what I'm doing with the thing, that planning ought to take place no matter what.
Yeah.
So does that all happen? Do you have to train clients to plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've trained our team to train clients in the sense of we try to slow things down on purpose. And so like we get a request in, for us, it kind of makes sense, but not really. It's not enough to move on, right? Hey, we need this new widget for our site and we need to do this thing. Like, okay, then we have a bunch of questions to help slow them down. And so we have to kind of train them to like, help us think through before we start coding on anything, before we start designing anything, help us really think through like what is happening in solving through that stuff. So I think a lot of the ones that have been with us for a long time have figured it out, and they now provide a lot more better specs of the request. It's fine when there's new projects. When there's new projects and you have a really good person leading that project, they come with all sorts of docs and they're ready. They're like, here's our full spec sheet. Here's our thing. We've got it all written out and stuff. What happens is then after you get past that first phase and now you're kind of in the winging it moment of like, hey, we have this new pain point. Is then how do you get them to slow down to say, oh, we still need a good spec on this. We train our clients, I think, just by the way we interact with them, the questions we ask, to really flesh things out. Our first company standard, I know there's a lot of values and stuff that companies have, but like we have company standards and purposely not values, because then it's easy to argue values, but it's hard to argue standards. Standards are just behaviors that are expected. And so our first company standard is listen twice. And it's really that core idea of somebody comes and has a request, and then our team is kind of just trained like, let me make sure I heard you. And then I have questions because now I'm not sure what it means for this. If we'd make that change, then it will impact this. Have you thought about that? What change do you want it to go there? We start pushing back, essentially revealing how we're thinking about it. And it can slow things down on purpose so that we build the right thing. And it's not just this hurried process of like, oh, we need this new page, but it's going to, you don't realize it's going to mess up all the other ones.
So clients are buying hours of dev. Are they buying hours of strategy also? Or, you know, I mean, like, where's all that time get accounted for? Or do you build that in on the backside? Because you bought dev, you're going to get the disciplines of that strategy work being done well.
It's all billable in that time. And obviously those thinking times don't really take a long time. So it's like, they're getting a high value strategy. So anytime we like are in, other than it's like quick emails, our account managers don't really log that much time. Honestly, our account managers are kind of free in that sense. But our developers and the thinking that they're doing, yeah, it's they turn on the clock and we do the clock and we don't round up, you know, any of that stuff. So if it's like 2.13 hours, then that's what it is, 2.13 hours. Who wants to round up? Like, that's extra work.
Right. Do you actually run timers?
Yeah.
To get to that level of precision?
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody has to do that. Everybody logs their time.
You go get a cup of coffee. Do you hit stop? Or like, how crazy do you get there?
No. I mean, it's all honor system. So I don't ultimately know. And the way I know is, so our engineering team has to record 26 hours per week towards their assigned projects. What doesn't get counted are like team meetings. And so a team meeting is an hour a week. If they have a one-on-one with their manager, it's another 45 minutes or so. So anything like kind of comes up randomly, but we also cap that. You can't spend, and this is to protect them, you can't spend more than 4 hours on non-scheduled work or like non-client work. So they log everything in, but they have to have a minimum of 26 hours, which I found is the sweet spot of not burning them out, but also getting enough.
So 26 billable out of 40. So that you have a very clear metric of what is essentially the overhead of making a good thing work. And I see people make that mistake all the time. Like, they built their business on like 40 billable hours per person. I'm like, dude, that's impossible. It just doesn't allow for the fact that like we're breathing human beings that need to think. If you know that, then you're in much better shape. And the interesting thing is that tracks with how you would run any type of service-based type of business. You would very often find that if you're a solo practitioner, even you would be doing halftime billable, halftime selling, and then squeeze in some administration around the edges. And that's your number. And I find that almost to be the immutable truth. And so when people are building those businesses from scratch, you're not going to bill that much time. It's impossible.
Impossible. You'll burn yourself out or your team, and then they'll hate you and want to move on and keep looking on wherever they're looking for new job opportunities. And so like, I want to be able to retain the best people. I can't pay the same salaries. Being an agency, we just can't pay the same salaries as other places. So I have to compete on culture to keep some of the best people, and the people I want to keep on my team is just provide them a calm place where you have clear directions, where you know if you're doing a good job or not, and you're not going to be overworked, where I respect the longevity. I want you to be here for long. So like the longest guy who's been with me has been with me for 10 years. And so he's also motivation. He was in Europe, and we give 6 weeks vacation for everybody who's been over. After your first year, you get 6 week vacation. And it's mostly because I wanted to keep him. He was in Europe and he took European style vacations. I was like, let's build a system where you're going to be happy.
Hey, that's a great recruiting message right there. 6 weeks of vacation. Yeah. And you're right. Like, I have clients in Europe and just like, yeah, I'm taking off the whole summer. Peace out. And you're just like, I could probably do better work if I actually took a break sometimes. It's true. And I would challenge everybody in the audience to pay a little attention to, you know, other models of being, because turns out we're maybe not so awesome at it.
And the advice we get in the US is like, go take a walk and then you'll be more productive. And I'm thinking like, we keep extending those time periods. So a walk is maybe 30 minutes. Okay, well now think about, we'll take a day off. You might have some better productivity. Take a week off, take 2 weeks off. And then what is the result? I think like some of that rest, I'm still not the best. I think I probably take the least amount of vacation on my team, but at least over the holidays, we do shut down for 2 weeks and I do shut down for myself. And over summer, I take a week and a half off. I don't take my computer and all that stuff. That's how we do it. That's what I'm trying to do, is just build a team that wants to be there so we can keep delivering good work for our clients. What's funny is now we're trying to build out some stuff for ourselves. So you had mentioned build and buy. And so in our little world of where we build within the Craft CMS kind of ecosystem, which content management system type thing, is we're finally building products. And so we're kind of becoming a product shop if we can make it fully bootstrapped. So it's all depending on client work, but we'll see if it survives, if all the things that I've set up as we turn into product work.
It's a great way to dog food your own thing, right? What's it like being our own client? Yeah. Have you discovered anything in that process that you kind of go, ooh, you know, like we want to improve our process because being on the other side of this isn't as awesome as we thought?
Yeah, we've treated ourselves as a client, like on our own website, for example, like the marketing team has a request, just like a client's marketing team would have a request. And we've seen some gaps and things like the work is fine, but sometimes the communication, because it's so obvious to us in the system of like how things are going, but clients don't always know how to read what we're doing. And so it's like, we should proactively tell them where things are. Because they don't always look at the self-reports. Like the it all exists, it's there, but then they don't live in our world, so they're not actively looking for it. So we've had those moments of just like, well, what is actually happening? Oh, that's actually done. We didn't tell you. And so we had to improve some of that stuff. It's so casual for us, like deploying on Fridays doesn't matter. Like, and we just, whatever. It's kind of regimented and careful that it becomes mundane in a lot of ways, where we're like, oh, that's a big deal that just happened. And we get to tell the client, oh, shoot. So I think we've learned that lesson recently.
Well, you know, you're going to be the guru that other people ignore someday. So I just want to, you know, just like, make sure you write this down somewhere so that other people can learn something.
All right, I'll work on that. I appreciate it, Ledge.
Well, Stephen, this is fun. I love what you're doing. And anybody out there that's resonating with this, wants to reach out, maybe have some software done, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can find us at fostercommerce.com. Got, just like a lot of people, a contact us page. It comes to my inbox. I can reach out to you there. Or you can find me on LinkedIn, Stephen Callender on LinkedIn. I'm around. Those are the best ways probably to reach out. And yeah, we'll build your next website. If you're frustrated, if you're worn down and frustrated with your website, then just hit us up and we'll unlock you. We'll free you up so that you have an awesome website for the next 8 to 10 years.
And you will feel calm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll learn the calmness of execution.
Exactly.
Well, fantastic, man. Thanks for hanging out. This was great. I love it. I'm challenging some of my own thinking now. So you've done well, sir.
Excellent. Hey, thanks for having me.
Talk soon.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Leaders of B2B podcast. And as always, you can see more information about this episode and all the resources mentioned at leadersofb2b.com. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star rating. This episode is brought to you by Content Allies. We help B2B companies launch revenue-generating podcasts. We schedule interviews between you and your ideal prospects and strategic partners. You show up for engaging conversations. We handle everything else. Ready to build a podcast that grows your business in just 1 hour per week? Reach out to us at contentallies.com.